Now I'm just gonna think of the time I said let's go like really weirdly for some reason every time.
When you went. Okay, let's
go. Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Let's go.
It's like I was counting into like a jazz song or something. Okay, welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we'll be discussing the, I guess it ran from 2012 to 2014 as a webcomic and then was published in print form in 2015, Nimona, a graphic novel by N.D. Stevenson.
Yes, it did.
I did not read this when it was current, like, content, like when it was being written, and illustrated. I knew, like, of its existence, but I guess I just never got around to it. But I read it for the first time last night, so this should be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I read it a few years ago.
Were you like following along while it was being published?
No.
Okay.
I got it. When did I work in Blue Stockings? I probably got it maybe like 4 years ago. It was before I worked there for a little bit, but it was also after it was published as as a graphic novel. And I will tell you that rereading it, I didn't remember anything. It was like reading it over for the first time. I was like, I don't know how I forgot so much about it. There were some panels where I was like, oh, I remember that art vaguely because it's cool. But I forgot the whole story. It was awesome rereading it. I do have like critiques, but...
Okay. The interesting thing to me was when I was reading it, I was like, I've actually maybe read more of this than I remember that I did. Because I definitely think I maybe was exposed to it at some point. Maybe I read the first chapter online or something. Because it was like very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think not just because it was like N.D. Stevenson and I was thinking about his work, but like, I don't know. It was just something about it was familiar.
It did remind me a lot about Riley from Lumberjanes.
Okay, yep.
And kind of like a combination of a bunch of campers all together. Like there was a lot of that echoing in here, but it's so fun and interesting and really cool.
Is that you offering to do the plot summary? It sounds like you're offering to do the plot summary. Or do
you
want me to do
it? You know how great I am at those. Yeah, I'll do it.
I know, but it's more fun when you do it wrong and then I correct struggle. You a whole bunch.
Okay, everybody get ready for this 20-minute summary.
Okay.
So this book is set in a weird combination of fantasy and science fiction, which is really awesome. We're going to talk about it.
Okay.
But basically, it follows this supervillain, quote-unquote, by the name of List.
Ballister Blackheart.
Yeah. So we have Ballister Blackheart, who was once a knight who was in line to become a great hero of the realm.
Yes.
But that kind of fell apart when his best friend and love interest, Ambrosius Goldenloin, when he, in a moment of anger, injured him greatly and Blackheart lost his arm and his chance at becoming this hero. So they have a rivalry going and Ambrosius is working for the Institute?
Yep, the institution.
Yeah, so Ambrosius is basically now the hero that Blackheart wanted to be.
Yep.
But it turns out that this organization that he wanted to work for all his life is corrupt. So it kind of reminds me a lot of Megamind.
Yep, yeah. Well, except in Megamind, I feel like the good guy is not as morally ambiguous as Ambrosius, but...
guess.
I forget what the name of the superhero guy is in Megamind.
Yeah, he's kind of just lazy and retiring.
Yeah.
Here, Ambrosius is kind of
He's a
bad dude.
He's
honestly
a pretty boy, but he's just trying to, like, I don't know, he just...
He's a very weak-willed person.
He's vain.
Yes.
And that vanity seems to drive a lot of what he does. Like, he doesn't... It seems like he's very concerned about his appearance. He doesn't want to appear to lose. He doesn't want to appear to be the bad guy. He's just totally focused on his appearance.
Absolutely. But the plot of the story itself is we follow Blackheart on his little villainous machinations, but we also follow Nimona, this young woman who shows up in his evil lab and proclaims herself to be his sidekick. And it's at first kind of their little adventures versus this institution and the kingdom. And then it turns out that because of its corruption, they're actually fighting to save the kingdom, to protect it from these evil people running it. It's one of those stories that you start following the villains, but very quickly realize that it's not the villains. You're following actually just people who are trying to make the world better in a different way. Not necessarily better, but they're trying to get rid of a bigger evil and are coming off as the bad guy because they are doing some radical things.
The anti-heroes, if you will.
Exactly. And we get a little bit of a background on everyone involved. And then there's a climactic showdown in which we see Blackheart and Nimona kind of fighting, but Blackheart trying to save Nimona and Nimona trying to save him. And it's like a back and forth. But, you know, as a lot of these graphic novels that we talk about, there is a happy ending.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just say the spoiler, right? We're going to talk about it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you haven't read it, this is the big spoiler, and then there's going to be little ones later. But in the end, Blackheart gets hurt, a Golden Loin gets hurt, and Nimona disappears, and everyone thinks that she died.
Yeah.
But what happens is Nimona is still out there, and she knows that Blackheart doesn't hate her like a lot of the other people in her life that end up betraying her. Yeah. And it's kind of like this bittersweet, everyone is safe at the end, but Nimona moves on to the next chapter of her life. And Blackheart probably doesn't see her anymore.
Or he
sees her everywhere.
Yeah, he sees her everywhere, but he can't be sure if it's ever her again.
Exactly. So it's one of those stories. And I think that's probably the best summary I've done in this podcast. And we are 76 episodes in, so that says something.
Okay. So we got there. It took 76 episodes, but we got there. Podcast over. Signing off. I think the important thing to also mention is there's a lot of questions about Nimona's. What exactly is she?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think I'm going to say the most internet, like, I don't know, just like, I hate the fact that I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say this, which is that Nimona is a lot like the Joker.
Okay, explain.
Because if you remember in the Dark Knight movie with Heath Ledger, like Heath Ledger tells all these stories about how he became the Joker, and every one of them is different.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is that, like, the point is not whether he's, you know, like, how he became the Joker or not. It's just the fact that he is the Joker. He's just here to cause chaos, and understanding his motivations for being this way is not really the question you need to be asking yourself in this situation. And I think the same thing is true of Nimona. She tells multiple stories about her life over the course of the novel. You know, first she tells this very innocent story about how this witch gave her shape-shifting because she was a bad witch and not like a very short-sighted witch and just needed to get out of a pit, and gave Nimona shape-shifting so that she could fly her out of the pit. And it's a really bad story, and Blackheart, you know, calls out the flaws in it right away. And Nimona, again, just doesn't seem to care. And then she tells another story about how, you know, she was, like, born with these powers. And then, you know, like, I forget the exact details of that one. And then there's a third story that I guess Blackheart hears about. Who does he hear about from?
I don't think he hears it. I think we kind of go into Nimona's actual backstory
out. Yeah, the flashback where she's
like
a changeling where, like, you know, there's that old mythological idea that, like, you know, like sometimes you know, magical creatures will come and abduct a child and replace it with one that looks exactly the same, but is like magic in some way. And that's basically the story of Nimona, is like this cuckoo story of like,
but
some
even
great
that
beast.
We don't actually know. It's just something that she has heard growing up.
Right. Like, we don't know that that's true. Yeah, because that's what they maybe believed, and maybe that's what they told her, but we don't know. So the whole point is that Nimona is, her backstory is mysterious, and therefore she is like the Joker. Thank you. It's Saturday night. Hey.
I see it.
Yeah.
Just like you.
Yeah.
It is a weird comparison, but it works, but I don't like it.
I mean, no one likes to be the Joker, except the Joker, I guess.
Yeah, there's a whole thing there with the psyche of the Joker,
yes,
that we can talk about.
Never, though, because I feel
like...
What do
you like, mean? You don't want to get like into this
I know
topic
we're a
deeply?
Media podcast, but I feel like doing an episode about the Joker is like the most like millennial dude with a podcast.
It sounds so
thing
boring.
You could possibly do like
it truly just sounds oh, like God. The worst conversation.
It's our Joker episode. We're gonna talk about the Dark Knight and Heath Ledger. He really did a good job.
Look, okay. Nimona doesn't
Nimona.
Deserve this.
No.
So let's go back.
Let's go back to Nimona. So let me ask you this question, because this is one I grappled with when I was reading it last night, which is, do you like Nimona?
I really like Nimona. Do you like Nimona?
I have mixed feelings about her.
Okay. Talk about that.
Okay. Yes. I'm going to talk about it. I think, like, I don't know, problematic fave style, like, she's too plucky. She's too, like, I don't know, manic pixie shapeshifter girl. I don't know, I just found her too, she's too good at what she does, and she's too uncaring about the consequences of her actions. And I guess that makes sense.
You know what I think it is? We have to consider the original format, right? It's this internet comic, and the chapters are fairly short, and it makes sense that it's very snappy. I mean, we talked about it. What was it? Hold on. What was the comic book that you had me read? Band vs. Band.
Oh, Band vs. Band.
Okay. We talked about it with Band vs. Band, right? When something is very long-term... And online,
I guess
and very
every...
indie, there's a sort of pacing to it.
Yeah.
I actually found her competence to be kind of useful.
Okay.
Because if it wasn't there, then we would have had a character who fails a lot in a thing she's supposed to be good at and has a lot of deep, deep trauma that comes out in moments, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to shift the attention a little bit to Golden Loin. He didn't work for me because of that exact reason. Like, he was incompetent at his job, and he had a lot of background stuff, emotional stuff happening.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't like that character that much at all. And I think we're not really supposed to like him that much.
No, I don't think, because I feel like if we were supposed to like him, we should have gotten like an episode where we saw like why he's so screwed up, but we didn't really get that.
Yeah, he was always just the same throughout the entire thing. We maybe see a beginning of a character arc for him at the very end, like the last panel, literally the last image.
Yep.
But other than that, I think Nimona would have been very similar to that character if we had that sort of if she was both incompetent and a thing she's supposed to be really good at, and she had a lot of outbursts. But the fact that she's so good and is still very violent, I don't know, something about it really worked for me personally. Like, when she kills those guards in the very first fight that they're in with Blackheart, and he talks to her about it and tells her, we don't murder, there are certain rules that I follow. And she's like, what rules? You're literally a villain. That's the whole point. First time reading it, it's like silly.
Yeah.
But knowing what I know now about her growing up as this little child who's just been experimented on her entire life. And then her saying it, why follow rules? You're the villain. You're supposed to be allowed to do whatever you want. And like a lot of the things that she does become way more loaded with that knowledge. And there's a helicopter outside of my window.
I don't know. Like, I don't want to say I dislike Nimona. Like, I like her as a character. I definitely
understand what you're saying. Yeah. There's just something about how easy everything that she does is that it doesn't add as much tension.
Yeah. Like, there's no doubt that she's going to win.
Tell me this. Who is the main character of, like, who is the main character of the story?
It's gotta be Ballister Blackheart.
That's what, something that I'm grappling with.
Okay.
Because ultimately, it is the story of Nimona. She comes in mysteriously. We never learn where she's from or how she came to be how she is, realistically. And then she disappears just as fast. Right? Yeah. She is an enigma. And Blackheart is just someone who is narrating the story for us.
Right.
It's the classic narration about a character, right? It's. Yeah. But I cannot decide whether it is about him or about her. Even with that narration.
I would say, okay.
Structure.
In the Greek definition of a protagonist. No, just kidding.
Is that the sound of the thesaurus pages flapping?
Yeah. Oxford's Dictionary defines the protagonist. I think, okay, Nimona is the motivating force here, but I don't think she's the protagonist. She's almost the, in some ways, I would say she's almost more the antagonist, because a lot of her actions are what motivate the protagonist, Ballister Blackheart, into action.
Mm-hmm.
Based on her, he responds to what she's doing in the same way that a hero has to respond to what a villain's doing in like a more traditional story. And in mm-hmm. that sense, Nimona is the antagonist. Ballister Blackheart is the protagonist. That is not to say that there aren't other antagonists like Golden Loin and the director, but just to say that Nimona is the force that motivates Blackheart into action for most of the story. I mean, there's other stuff that happens. Like, mm-hmm. the director wants to kill Nimona, and Blackheart comes up with his own plot, but he mostly comes up with that because Nimona spurs him into action. So I really think she's the antagonist. Or maybe there's some, like, fancy term for
someone. Yeah, I think there's a different term for it, because I wouldn't even call her that. Yeah, there has to be a term for it. I feel like I know it, and I cannot remember it for the life of me. I'm just going to return my degree back my school.
I'm going
to
Google it.
But yeah, you're right. She is not necessarily like, she's the driving force of the story.
Yeah.
But Ballister is the person we are actually following.
Yeah. And none of this, okay, I'm looking at a bunch of different lists, and it's like, she's not a deuteragonist. Because that's like a sidekick. Definitely not a love interest. Not a confidant. Maybe a foil, but I don't think she's a foil.
She's not a foil. Yeah.
Yeah. What is she? If you know what she is, please write in and tell us. Because
tell us what we're thinking about.
We are idiots. And clearly,
we're very smart people who English is not our first language.
You have a master's degree in writing.
I included you in this. I said, is not our first language.
What?
Which is clearly a lie.
You know,
for
I was
half
an English major for 2 years, right? Like, have we
I
talked
said
about
what
that?
I said. We don't have to air our laundry here.
I did find a website that will write papers for you.
Ooh.
Yeah, let's get a paper written. Hell yeah. Oh my God, why am I so. It's Saturday night. I'm swearing a lot. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I think we're allowed to say that one, though. I won't say it again.
Wow, Chloe is really acting up Nimona style today.
It's
great.
This is spicy, spicy in media lives.
Yeah, I kind of made her wait till evening to record because outside my window It's like a really nice day, so there are approximately 35 children on the street all day playing around, and I think this is the first time that it has been quiet all day.
And see, I'm really like pumped up because okay, I've been playing Persona 5 Royal all day, and I'm finally on the final boss, and then I had this really like tedious phone call today, and I was like annoyed.
Okay, so, fine. I won't call you again. Jeez.
I'm not going to say who called me because I don't want to like blow up their spot. But
no, that's fine.
But anyway, it was not Val. Val doesn't call. She's a...
I can call. Do you want me to call?
She's a Gen Z. They don't know how to use phones.
I called you once and you freaked out.
It did really like freak me out. I have called you before and you have never answered. So
what?
There was one time you were late to Dungeons & Dragons, and I called you, and you did not answer.
I didn't have my phone. I was, like, in the middle of something. I don't remember what I was doing. I was, okay. Like, in the basement. Yeah. I think I might have been doing laundry, and then came up, and I saw, like, 14 text messages from you and, like, 3 missed calls.
I don't do half measures, so, yeah, that makes sense.
anyway. I was very late to that D&D session, like, an
Nimona.
Hour.
Nimona!
Nimona! We're okay. Back on track.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question now, which is that what did you think of the character of Meredith Blitzmeyer, whom we have not mentioned up until this point?
The butch-looking androgynous scientist?
Yes. Who provides the MacGuffin that solves the Nimona problem at the end.
She just tickles me. She's so out of place. She reminds me of that, what's her name in Lumberjanes? The camp owner, the big lady.
Yeah, I don't remember her name.
Yeah, she just like comes in, says some nonsense, she's doing her own thing, and then helps out, and then goes back to doing her own thing. I'm a huge fan. I don't know, something about her... Not necessarily disheveled appearance, but disheveled brain is very pleasing to see on the page. She's just, like, all over the place.
Yeah, she's very much the stereotype, I feel like, of, like, an absent-minded scientist type. Yeah, ditzy
scientist.
And, I don't know, like...
What did you think of her?
I mean, I think she was pretty one-note. She was there to be the science person who has the...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She was there for, like, that thing she invented and for the joke at the end when she's Ballister's emergency contact.
Yes.
Like, that's all she's there for. Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah. She's wonderful. I want to see, like... So she's the type of character who I feel like is ripe for, like, spin-off territory. Like, of all the characters I want to know more about, I think Well, I want to know more about the director.
For real.
Because... Well, I know you do, because she's an evil lady, so of course you want to know more. But...
Not my type of evil lady, but I really want to see those two together.
Yes.
Because they seem like one would want to steal everything from the other, and the other would not know that she exists at all.
Right. And it's funny, because I feel like, I don't know, like, you're kind of supposed to want to know more about Ambrosius, I feel like. I really don't care. He's some hunk, Chad. I want to know more about the director.
Well, he's definitely not a hunk. He's like barely a twonk. Okay, so let's get that on that.
Well, he's got the big chest.
I guess. They're all twinks.
I mean...
Nothing against twinks.
He's a twunk. That's a good way of putting it. He's a twunk.
Yeah, Ballister is... I don't know.
What are you going to say? Finish that thought.
I'm trying to figure it out, but I don't know if that's the correct phrase. What's an otter?
That's like a skinny bear.
I feel like he gives off otter vibes.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you read it online or not, but I have a physical copy and there's like a bonus comic in the back.
Yeah.
Where we see Ballistar and Golden Loin when they were very, very young kids in an orphanage. And it's like a Christmas little comic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like Ballistar doesn't feel like... a very feminine person in it, whereas Golden Loin does.
Fair.
But as an adult, he also doesn't feel very masculine.
I guess Ballister, I just always imagined, like, the whole time I was reading it, being played by Robert Downey Jr.
Okay. No, I guess that makes sense. He's
very, like, Tony Starky.
I don't know. To me, he felt very much like, hold on, I have to look this up. Okay.
Either Tony Starky or, like, Robert Downey Jr. or Benedict Cumberbatch, one of the two.
He feels very much like Adrian Brody to me.
Adrian Brody?
He's tall and quiet.
What a weird pull. Okay.
He's tall and quiet, and he's just kind of like...
But I feel like Adrian Brody very has socially. This kind of nervous energy that
Ballister does he not give in. Off? Yes, he... Oh my god, he felt so nervous to me at all times.
I don't know.
Except when he took care of Nimona emotionally on like 3 or 4 pages. Yeah. But he felt like he had no idea what was happening, like what to do, even though he was in control. You know what I mean? Like... That now he has that competency and lack of resources sort of feeling. You know what I mean? Like, he knows what he's doing, but he has failed at this for so many years, canonically.
Yeah.
That he's just, like, down in his luck, kind of, like, living his life, doing his best in a sad kind of way. I don't know.
Okay, while we're fan casting, Ambrosius, go.
Ambrosius fan cast. Oh god. Hugo, hold on.
Oh god, okay.
I can't think of any blonde man ever. Blonde for some reason. They're all
I
gone.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just like he's got to be played by the guy who plays Jaime Lannister, whose name I forget. Who's a little not twinky enough.
Yeah, he's a little too masculine, I feel like. Yeah,
okay, maybe
there
the
was
guy.
Someone else in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's one of the Game What's, of Thrones actors.
Yeah, the Game of Thrones guy who, and I only watched, like, the first couple of seasons, but the guy who liked Sansa, or Sansa liked him, like, the pretty boy.
Oh, Joffrey?
No. Like, the long-haired blonde
Oh, the Knight of the Flowers.
Yeah, that fella.
What's his name? It's, played by Finn Jones.
Loras.
Loras Tyrell, played by Finn Jones. Yes, that's it. That's it. You got it. Okay. Yep. Okay. I agree with that casting. Okay, now Nimona.
Nimona.
Ashley Birch. We're just going to say Ashley Birch. voiced
by Ashley Birch.
And played by.
Who would play Nimona? I'm thinking of is... the lesbian teen from The Killing.
I have to look that up. Bex Taylor Klaus.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to look.
They play a lot of like emo looking roles.
Okay. Yeah.
Just get some pink in that hair and feel like they would. Oh, yeah. Actually, hold on. I'm sending you a photo.
Is it them with pink hair?
Yeah, it just, as soon as I said it, I scrolled down and it was there. Almost sent it in the wrong channel to the wrong people. Just a random Bex photo in some random server. That's Nimona-like.
Yeah, I can see it. Okay.
This conversation got very weird.
Why?
I've never fan cast anything.
I feel like really I do this all the time with Becky.
I think the last time I did it was when we played Monster Hearts and
Okay.
And all did the CW, let's choose adults to play teenagers, who would we choose sort of thing.
Well, I mean, we've got 2 characters left to go. Do you want to do it or are you done?
Wait, which characters?
The director and Dr. Oh. Blitzmeyer.
Oh, okay. I know exactly who the doctor will be. Let me Google this.
Yeah, we're just sitting here Googling because we can never remember names. Okay. I've got my pick for the director.
For the director? Okay.
Yeah.
For me, it's Tilda Swinton. Is that how you say her name?
Tilda Swinton?
Swinton, yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And who is your pick?
I'm going to go with a little bit... I'm going to get a little creative and say Leslie Ewan, who was Gaia in Horizon. I think she would actually do a really good job as the director. It's a bit of like I'm not doing it based on like appearance necessarily. It's based on vibe, and I feel like she would do a really good job doing that. Like, because she does Gaia in Gaia in Horizon, and she does a really good job playing this like slightly aloof AI voice. I don't know. I just feel like she could do a good job being like the weird director of this weird faceless institution.
I do not remember how she sounded. I just remember being like, I want her to talk to me a little more.
Yeah, and I feel like that's good. Like, the director should, because the institution's supposed to be supposedly good, yeah. And I feel like having her there in this role would be really good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Dr. Blitzmeyer, I don't know about, but yes.
I know.
Who?
It's Sue Perkins from...
Sue Perkins.
Yeah, from the Great British Bake Off.
Never watched it.
You don't need to. Just Google Sue
Perkins. Oh, this lady.
This person. Okay. Yeah. I feel like she has like that energy, that chaotic.
She looks like a Doctor Who character.
She does. And I don't know if you've ever seen like any clip of them talking, but super energetic, always feels very ADD.
Okay. That works. Okay.
Or, oh my god, how do I forget his name? The guy who was the mad scientist in Spy Kids. Jeez Louise, hold on.
The gay guy. Neil Patrick Harris?
Spy Kids. I don't know
who was in
Alan Cumming.
Okay. I thought he might have been. He played a mad scientist in Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. That was what I was thinking of. Okay, this guy.
Yeah.
What do I know him from? Oh my god, it's gonna bug me.
He's in a bajillion movies.
Yeah, but what do I know him from? I don't care. Oh, he was in GoldenEye. That's what I know. Okay, got it. And he was in Spice World, which I have not seen, but good to know.
He's on a lot of stuff.
When are we going to do a Spice World episode?
What is that?
It's the Spice Girls movie.
Oh my god, we should. You know what we should do?
What?
Cheetah Girls.
I don't know that one.
I watched it 20 years ago.
Okay.
Don't remember anything about
it. I'm Googling it.
I feel like it'll be so ridiculous, but any Disney movie where they're like young women is very often so queer.
It's a musical.
There's a musical?
It says The Cheetah Girls is a 2003 American musical television film.
Oh, yeah, because it's about a girl band.
14 girls in Manhattan perform at a children's birthday party as the Cheetah Girls. After it
sounded
the performance...
like you said 14. It's an acapella. It's an acapella group. It's 14 girls.
At the
not
performance,
14 girls.
Chanel rushes home to tell her mother, or after the performance, But her mother is preoccupied preparing for a date with her new Parisian boyfriend, which I was about to read as Persian boyfriend, and I was going to be like, that's very specific that they mentioned the boyfriend's race. It's still a little specific, but...
But he's from Paris.
One of the girls is named Galleria.
Is it? Oh. My god.
Not Galleria, Galleria.
No, yeah. I was just... It was just so long ago, I don't remember.
To her parents, who chastise her for not taking phone messages for her mother or walking their Bichon Frise dog, Toto. Meanwhile, Dorinda attends to her job, doing janitorial work at a community center.
One of these is not like the others.
Oh, Bichon Frises are very cute, though. Or is it Bichon Frise or something? I don't even know how you say that word.
I don't know. Those dogs are fake. One time I thought it was a plush animal, and it was not. It started moving.
Anyway.
Nimona. We cast everyone.
The Cheetah Girls will be playing Nimona. Galleria as Ballester Blackheart.
I really like that... Nimona just kills the director.
Yeah.
Like, the director is not part of this. We know she's evil. There's nothing deeper to it. There was a moment where Nimona was like, you goblin, and it seemed to have struck a chord with the director. And that's super interesting.
Goblin?
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I do the voice?
No. Oh, God.
Chloe quits immediately.
No.
But that was so interesting to me. Because not only did it say that Nimona hit the nail on the head, it also shows me that Nimona knows who the, like, what the director is.
Yeah.
And possibly who she is personally. And that's scary.
Yes.
So I really like that moment. I liked that they did that Stevenson didn't sugarcoat this. That Nimona just killed the director.
Yeah.
So, and it was one panel and that's it.
This makes me think of a question that I have for you, mm-hmm. which is, hypothetically, if there were, you know, like a child in your life that you were going to recommend this to, at what age would you recommend Nimona to them? I feel like it doesn't pull its punches. Like, there is a lot of murder from the get-go, and it is unapologetic about Nimona being like, yeah, I killed him, so what? And like, yeah, you're right at the end. She kills the director. It's not presented as a bad thing in the slightest. And there's just a lot of very violent, and like Nimona's talks multiple times, whether it's true or not, about her parents dying. It just, it's a very violent little graphic novel for something that seems to almost have like a YA vibe to it.
Honestly, I feel like I would have really enjoyed this comic as like a 5-year-old. But I think I would have not let Zach read it until he was maybe 8.
Okay.
But I don't see anything in it. It's not graphic.
No.
Right. Even when, Ballister stabs a guy one time to protect Nimona.
Okay.
And his sword is painted red. Right. There's no blood dripping, nothing like that. Oh.
What was that?
A random YouTube video started.
Oh.
I was not even on that page. And it startled me.
Val's so bored by this conversation.
She's watching YouTube. I'm so bored. I'm just watching sports.
Yeah. What sports, though?
Climbing, obviously.
Okay, of course. I shouldn't even ask.
I had the final opened in a different tab, and it just started playing. That was very weird. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Like, there's nothing in this that's violent. I'm sure that there are many things that will go completely over a child's head. It's a pretty comic. The color scheme is interesting. I really like the way it's drawn, and it's just pretty. The story is fast-paced. There's not a lot of dialogue, which, thank God. Sometimes yeah. these comics have, like, pages where it's just pure dialogue, and I can never get through those pages.
I'm so just you're like, not a fan of Subnormality, then?
What is that?
I'm just going to send you a page from this. It's one of my favorites, but it is definitely a acquired taste of a comic.
While you're sending that, anything that is a comic that just has like massive paragraphs of text, I will not engage with.
This is what like the average page of it looks like.
Oh God, no. That's so tough on me. Like, so Chloe just sent me 2 panels from a comic, and they're both vertical, and it's just like 12 text bubbles.
Each of a paragraph of text in them. And that, okay, the point of Subnormality, though, is that it is basically just entirely a character's kind of inner monologue with some, like, art to accompany. Like, it's definitely, the focus is on the text. The art is beautiful, but, like, the point of it is that there's a lot of text.
It gave me a migraine immediately.
I will say, like, if you can't get it, there is a YouTube series that was done. I think it was called Abnormality. Very good. If you can't read this much text, just watch Abnormality. Anyway, Nimona.
Yeah, I don't know how to read. And Nimona is very much a graphic novel where the art does a lot and the sparse text does a lot. Stevenson is able to say very many, many things with very few words. And, you know, sometimes we need comics like that. I'm not saying that I don't read comics with, like, a lot of text. I've read the D&D comic.
Die?
Yeah, Die has a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
And, like, it was really fun, and I was engaged, and I didn't mind it. But I don't think I'm able to read comics mostly like that. Like, I do need a lot of... I need to distress between comics like that with comics that have the writing style of Nimona. And I'm not saying it's, like, simple. The writing is simple, but the message is really dense.
Okay.
And I really enjoy that, actually. And often, in most cases, I enjoy it more.
You said message. So overall, what is the message of Nimona to you?
To me personally, it is... At first, it felt like found family.
Okay. I disagree with that.
Yeah, like, when I first started reading, I was like, oh, they're going to become friends, and he's going to protect her, and she's already protecting him, and they're going to be a happy family in the end. But no, I think, to me, in the end, this was a story of the people you need to meet in life to be able to go on and to come out stronger for it. Like, Nimona needed Ballister in the moment that she had him.
Yeah.
And then when that was done, she could move on a little better for it. And her trauma was not made little. And she didn't get fixed, right? And she didn't forget any of it. And we don't know what she's going through. But she felt lighter in the end. A little more mature, a little more stable. And I think that's what it is.
I agree. I think, yeah, I mean, there's people who come into your life who make an impact. And I think Nimona and Ballister both change each other for the better in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And they need that. But fundamentally, their way of existing in the world is incompatible.
Yes.
And we get that from the start. Like, we know that they're incompatible from the start. He does not want to hurt anyone. Yeah, he doesn't really want to hurt anyone.
She wants to hurt everyone.
She wants to break the world.
Mm-hmm.
He wants, and it's kind of like he wants change through, like, incrementalism and cleverness, and she just wants to break the world. And it's important for them to meet, and they learn things from each other. And he learns from that, like, his current way of doing things is just going to end with him in prison eventually. Which I think Nimona even tells him, like, your plan is just going to get you arrested, like, because you don't, you know, you're not willing to hurt anyone, and you're supposed to be a villain. On the other hand, you know, he teaches Nimona that, like, you don't have to hurt people to affect change. And they both need to learn that lesson, and they do, but then their worldviews are still...
Not even to affect change, it's more so she doesn't need to hurt people to feel safer.
Okay, yeah. I agree.
Because I don't think she actually cares about the kingdom in any capacity whatsoever. Like, she's very careless about other people.
I mean, she cares about it.
Not in a negative way, but...
In so much that it affects her.
Yeah, like...
She wants to be left alone.
Exactly. Now, I actually have a question for you.
Okay.
That might devolve into another, like, forever question, but...
Uh-oh.
Not
a forever question.
We talked about She-Ra as well.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of similarities between several characters. And I just wanted to ask you, who do you find Nimona most like? Because I know who I find her most like. And I'm just wondering if it's the same person.
Catra? No.
Nah.
What's her name?
Uh-huh.
Entrapta?
Oh, no.
No.
I find her to be most like Glimmer. Don't you?
Explain.
I don't know. I feel like emotional outbursts, very solid in her beliefs and the actions she makes. Like, Glimmer is very self-confident when it comes to making decisions. Maybe not personal things, but as a leader, she's always decisive and she's always willing to take the extra step, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like Nimona has a lot of those qualities. Because at first I was like, is she like Catra? But I don't think Catra is as strong as Glimmer in a lot of aspects. I don't know. She just really reminded me of Glimmer.
Okay. Interesting. I guess
it wasn't a question that devolved. I thought we were going to bicker about
it. I don't know.
I
understand where you're coming from. I don't know. I just didn't really associate it really strong with any of the characters.
It was more of like a tertiary thought for me, because a lot of Stevenson's work has very similar character archetypes and you know, the pacing, the storytelling aspect of it, like his I guess storyteller mark is on those. And I feel like it's Glimmer and it's April from Lumberjanes, the redhead leader kind of person. They have a lot of, like, they have that one sort of characteristic where it's bullheadedness mm-hmm. that I really like in Stevenson's work.
Okay, yeah. I mean, now that you say it, I can see it, but I don't know. I just didn't feel it the way you did, I guess.
And, I mean, I didn't feel it for any of the other characters. Even though we can kind of like, we can try and find similarities between, you know, the director, Blackheart, Golden Loin, like, but in the end, none of the other characters kind of resonate the same.
Yeah.
But for Nimona specifically, I don't know, there's just like a character that Stevenson puts in a lot of his stories that is like that character.
Okay.
And for me, Nimona and Glimmer are very similar in that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, like, I guess I see it. I just don't have a strong opinion.
That's like, that on that.
Okay, that's fine. Like, I can understand why you see it that way. I don't know. Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's interesting. Because it's just something that was, like, in the back of my head. Maybe because, so I had Stevenson just, I Googled him.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just always Google the person who created a thing we talk about and then not do anything with that page and just have it open.
Same.
But, like, it had the three, like, TV shows. Critical Role, who for some reason was there, even though he guessed it on, like, two episodes.
Yeah.
But it was Nimona, it was She-Ra, and it was, like, Crit Role or something. And it made me really think about it for some reason.
Cool.
What did you think? Okay. Let's... I feel like we should wrap up talking yes. about the queer relationship as well.
Okay. Ballister and Ambrosius. Yeah,
what did you think about it?
I mean...
How was it... did you like how it was done?
Yes, because it's implied, it's not present. It's just always kind of... You know it's there. He did a really good job capturing this tension without ever actually saying explicitly that Ballister and Ambrosius... used to be together.
Yeah.
You sound, I mean, okay, you sound skeptical. Anytime they're on
the same, no, I was going to say every time they're on the page together, Ambrosius is like 2 seconds away from making out with Ballister, and yeah. Ballister is like, you're my ex, and I don't want to talk to you, but I want you to talk to me.
Yep.
It's really fun.
It's really good, the tension between the two of them. And I find it interesting because I feel like Blackheart also has some tension with Blitzmeyer, maybe. I don't know. I felt like there was something there.
The scientist?
Yeah.
They do open up a lab together.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they had, like, I don't know. Like, Ballister, to me, also just has big bisexual energy.
He does. Like, it also felt very much like they're the same person.
Yeah.
And they're geeking out they together.
They both love science.
Yeah. That's not to say that I don't see what you're implying.
Yes.
Now that you say it, I'm like, oh, yeah, it is kind of there. I could totally see them being just, like, partners. Yeah. Not lab partners. Romantic platonic.
Yeah. Fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, look, sometimes a gay guy is friends with a butch lesbian.
Yeah, this is true.
And sometimes it's weird and a close relationship, and there's layers to it, and it's funky fresh. As I always say, Chloe.
Yeah.
Well, okay, in this case, he doesn't have two hands.
Okay, yeah.
But he kind of does.
I was going to say, you can't say that. You think about that. This is one of the few times where you literally can't say he has two hands.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you could say he has a second hand due to science, and therefore, maybe you'll share that hand. Therefore, it's a perfect hand. Oh, God. Okay.
I can even make the case that even if you don't have the two hands, you can always make two hands.
I don't know what that means.
Me neither.
Two hands. I don't want to know. If you have any thoughts on what Val means by that, please feel free to not write us.
Yeah, don't write us about that.
Don't tell us that. thank you all so much for tuning in. Sorry, do you have any last thoughts before I outro us?
Do the spiel.
Thank you all so much for tuning in. We have a Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is @InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez, and our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialist.tumblr.com. I almost forgot it.
Our website is inmedialist.com, and you can reach us at inmedialist@gmail.com. And we have a Discord server. The link is in the description. Thank you so much to everyone who's joined, and thank you to all of you.
And we'll see you in the next one.
And God bless you.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss new episodes. Also, it helps us grow, and we appreciate every single one of you who follows. And if you like us, tell a friend. Just be like, hey, these two lesbians are talking about other lesbians, gays, and like really queer people, and sometimes they even talk about non-binary folk. Once again, thanks for listening, and we appreciate you.